cracking, folks. I'm Jared Dubin, and this is Quo Vadimus. Like we said earlier this week, we're not going to do the regular Friday podcast with Seth this week. He is on vacation in Hawaii. So instead...
Partnow is in Hawaii. He deserves it.
Hardworking dude.
Alaska. He deserves to go to Hawaii.
Exactly. You know, I said we were going to discuss the weather there if we did a podcast this week. But, you know, we're going to let him enjoy himself instead.
Seth and
Mrs. Partnow are enjoying the nice warm weather, hopefully.
Shouts to the Zika virus.
I really hope they did not watch last night's TNT games. So instead of having Seth, in case you haven't noticed yet, on the line with me today is my good friend Jason Concepcion, a.k.a. Network, a.k.a. the funniest guy on the internet, a.k.a. the Maester, a.k.a. whatever else you want to call him.
A.K.A. Young Unemployed.
Former Grantland great, Jason Concepcion. What's up, my man?
Nothing much. What's up? I'm doing good. I think that thing where people go, how are you? And you go, nothing much. And it's like, doesn't really make sense.
But well, you were anticipating the what's up.
Yeah.
I do that sometimes, too. Like, someone will, you know, say something and then I'll just be like, oh, yeah, yeah. And it's like they didn't even ask a question.
What is the name of this podcast?
It's Quo Vadimus.
Is that like some Latin for...
It is Latin. This is good stuff right now. It's Latin for where are we going? And I stole it from Aaron Sorkin's Sports Night, which was... the title of the series finale was Quo Vadimus.
Nice.
And I thought it worked well, because, you know, that's... We're talking about all kinds of the stuff that has to do with where we're going. And, you know, today we're talking about where the Knicks are going. You know, very fittingly, where they're going has a lot to do with your grown adult son, Kristaps Porzingis.
He's a grown man. He has a upper respiratory infection, which is NBA code for he got the flu or some kind of cold.
I mean, he's only 20, so I can't imagine it was like he went out in Toronto last night. Or can you drink at 20 in Canada?
Yeah, you can. It's like, I think 19 is the drinking age over there in Canada.
But he did say he doesn't drink really at all in that.
Okay, we like that about him.
Yeah, I would prefer that he basically does nothing except basketball and be awesome.
Right, until he retires, and then he can go directly to the hard drugs. directly to K2, directly to heroin.
They're actually going to name Special K after him. It's not going to be Special K anymore. It's going to be Special Kristaps.
He's going to be smoking that, the fake marijuana, the fake weed, they call it.
Oh, the stuff that got Chandler Jones in trouble before the Patriots game.
Right, stuff that got Gerald Green allegedly wiling out in the lobby of some building.
Yeah, and who was it that reportedly saved him? Was it Gerald Green?
Who saved Gerald Green?
Who was the one that calmed him down, I mean?
Oh, I don't know. These are secret. These are like dark NBA secrets that we may never know because...
There was somebody, but I can't remember who it was.
Buries bodies in graves of people who know shit.
Yeah, well, look.
It's like the minority owner of the Heat who's talking reckless about LeBron.
About LeBron.
About LeBron. That guy's about to disappear.
And look, Pat Riley is persona non grata for the two of us.
Yes. Although I've come to terms with it in my life.
I'm still younger than you, so I haven't come to terms with it yet.
I've come to terms with it because the Knicks should have just given him what he wanted.
Yeah, they should have, but I feel like once I turned 30, then I'm not allowed to hold petty grudges from my childhood anymore. So in like a year and a half, I'll forgive Pat Riley. And I know that's like breaking huge news to anyone that actually listens to this podcast.
So, did you see the outfit that my son Kristaps was wearing on the sideline?
I did. He was wearing, you know, the Michael Jackson jacket with all them zippers.
Yeah, it was like a Thriller 3.0 jacket.
It was pretty amazing.
With all the kind of like, weird stitching that kind of is like angular and stuff. Like it looked like almost like a Fremen drinking suit from Dune, but black with like the hot sneakers on.
He's like a very fashion-forward kind of guy. You know, he's always well-dressed in the locker room and stuff. He did a couple fashion photo shoots before the season. I know he did one for a magazine that actually my friend from high school did the piece on him for it. And I was very surprised to see it pop up on his Instagram. I was like, wow, that's really fun.
He's so polished, my son.
Like he really amazing. Is. Like,
he's and he's seen, he's altered the course of this franchise.
Yeah, I mean, that's, you know, I talked about it, and we've talked about it, like, off of podcasts, just on G-Chat, like, a few times a game, he'll just do something that drives us to shake our heads so hard that we have to talk to somebody else about it. Like, it's such a unique specimen of player.
Yeah, I mean, you just don't see guys that can block, you know, 2.5 to 2 shots a game and hit 2 or 3 threes a game. That just doesn't really occur.
Yeah, I saw.
And the fact that he's 7'3" is just right. He has a chance to be a really like an evolutionary leap kind of player for the NBA because we've never really seen a guy this tall do stuff like that.
Right, like a stretch center, which is, you know, it's and at that size, you know, like Anthony Davis should be a stretch center too, but they're playing him at power forward because they spent a bajillion dollars on centers that aren't all that good.
Shouts to Omer Asik.
Yeah. One of, if not the worst contract in the league right now. You know, and Davis is as amazing as he is, and especially at that size, he's 6'11". Kristaps is 7'3". It's a little bit different. And I saw Tommy Beer from Basketball Outsiders tweet the other day that he's one of two guys in the league with at least 30 made threes and at least 90 block shots right now. It's him and Serge Ibaka. Our friend Zach Lowe, wrote a column today about, you know, the kinds of guys that can fit next to Blake Griffin. And it was like, Serge Ibaka and Kristaps. You know, like, there aren't that many players like that. And that's sort of the guy that I compared him to before the draft. I was like, you know, it's a 7'3 Serge Ibaka with more range and not yet quite as good of shot blocking, but the potential for even more refined type of defense.
Yes. His defense is, I was about to say arguably, but I don't even think it's arguable. I think this defense is really the most impressive part of his game.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's that or the offensive rebounding, but that's tapered off a bit since the start of the season.
Yeah, I think he's gone through like at least 2.5 rookie walls.
Yeah.
This season. And he's got a couple of nagging injuries that appear to have, you know, slowed him just a little bit. He picks his spots more, but it's like his ability to go from straight up and down to corralling shots, the way he uses his body, uses angles, understands how to use his height. He's been doing this thing where he's able to, like, get in the passing lane with just by kind of, like, putting this huge arm out and reaching like around a guy's back to poke the ball out. It's really exciting when you watch, like, he'll go on these, even when he's not scoring, he'll go on these runs where it's like he alters a shot and then he alters another shot and then he gets a steal and then he, you know, and whether or not the Knicks convert on the other end, you can see how there's the seeds of the kind of team that hopefully they could eventually become if they get some athletes who can also shoot, some guys that can get out in transition.
And he does those things in the passing lane, you know, while reaching around without actually making contact with the guy. Yeah, and then, you know, he'll do the thing, like the verticality thing, but in addition to just going straight up, because his arms are so long, he can stick them out at the last minute and actually block the shot, too. He did it to Westbrook twice in one game the other day. It was, like, absurd. And, you know, I asked him about it after the game, and he was like, well, you know, he got me on a few of those, too. And I was like, dude, you blocked Westbrook at the rim twice. Like, get out of here with that nonsense.
My heart goes, it's like my heart jumps into my throat, too, because and I've said it so many times, but the great, great, great thing about him is that he even is like, I'm going to take this challenge. here's Westbrook, and I'm going to go up, and if I get dunked on, whatever. Like, he's been dunked on, what, two or three times this year?
Yeah, I mean, at least. You know, he's got Hassan Whiteside got him real good.
Yep. Who else got him?
Trying to remember who else. Somebody a few games ago got him really good.
And it's almost like, it's shocking that it's not higher, that's not a higher number just for the amount of time.
Yeah, and you know what? He said that earlier in the season. He said, you know, I asked him about how he's blocking so many shots because guys are so willing to challenge him. And he said, like, you know, I don't care. I'm going to try to block every shot that I can actually block. And there are going to be times where I get posterized and it just doesn't matter, which is, you know, the kind of attitude you have to have if you're going to go up and block shots all the time. You know, it happened last year when Wiggins detonated on Rudy Gobert's head, and it was like the greatest thing anyone had ever seen because, holy shit, somebody actually dunked on Rudy Gobert.
Yeah, it's pretty great. That said, I mean, there are a few. The team runs essentially no plays for him.
No.
I mean, that's a function of the triangle, I think, a little bit. Like, there's one, flared screen that Melo sets for him to get him free for a three.
Yep.
They do that, like, they do that maybe once every 1.5 games. They don't do it a hell of a lot.
And that's actually, because I asked them both about it, because I noticed it. They freelance into it. It's just part of the triangle, and when Melo sees Kristaps exactly behind him, sometimes he'll just do it.
Yeah, and that's the kind of thing where, It's this weird dichotomy that theoretically Kristaps is the perfect triangle big, right? Ostensibly, but Kristaps, his progression, the way we think he's going to evolve, the triangle would hold him back from
right. It limits the kinds of things he can do because certain things aren't naturally included in it. You know, there's not a natural high pick and roll or pick and pop within the triangle. You know, it'll come if the ball gets swung to the weak side and then you see a certain look from there. And they've gotten looks for him out of that on occasion. But the way that, you know, he's so bouncy on the dive to the rim and then he has such good range and, you know, the best part of him working in the pick and roll. And Seth Rosenthal was the first one to notice this at the start of the year. Is that, you know, he'll sort of read his guy off of the pick and roll, and he'll be rolling and then see that guy drop back a step too far and then just, like, back his ass up to the three-point line and knock down a three.
Yep.
It's incredible. It really is. And, you know, even the defense, you know, everybody talks about the shot blocking all the time. The most impressive thing to me is that he's been able to switch onto wing guys and even point guards and not get completely embarrassed.
Right.
You know, he's even been able to take the ball from something. Like, he stole the ball from LeBron on a switch earlier
in the
season.
Yeah, it's been pretty amazing. One of the things I've really enjoyed this season is watching whoever is matched up with him, whether it be Bosch or Millsap. You know, a lot of these, like, really good forwards in the league all of a sudden be like, okay, I have to give this guy my best move.
Yeah.
And they'll often score on him, but it'd be like, oh, okay, I have to actually bring my top shelf move on this guy.
That was like that down the stretch against the Kings when Boogie, the first time he got Kristaps matched on him, put his shoulder in, took him right to the basket. It was like overpowering. That was another one that he got yammed on. And then the next time down, he tried to do the same thing, and KP just stood his ground.
Yep.
So Boogie was like, you saw him, like the wheels turn the next time down, like, all right, I got to throw a different kind of move at him.
It's tremendously exciting to have a son like Kristaps Porzingis.
I do want to know, how did you get, you know, a gigantic white dude as a son?
Well, I was traveling through Latvia.
Yeah.
This is around, 1994, 1993, 1994, 1995.
Okay.
And I was just traveling the Baltic states because that was something I did back then.
Right.
Just, like, looking around.
That was one of the first things you told me about yourself.
Right. The Iron Curtain had come down, and I was like, there's this whole area of the world that is now open to, Western capitalism. I think I'm going to check this out. And, you know, you meet people, you know, and one thing leads to another, and next thing you know, 20 years later, you've got a 7'3" son who's playing in the NBA, and it's fantastic.
I mean, who hasn't that happened to? I mean, is there anyone in the world that can't tell basically the same story?
What do you think? Griffin, here's something I've been thinking about. Blake Griffin next to Porzingis.
It's all I've been thinking about since people brought it up.
I know, right? It's interesting to think about how that kind of represents, like, the weird inversion of the NBA over the last, like, 6 years. That would be a lineup in which your forward would be, you know, the inside man, and your center would be, like, lurking around the perimeter somewhere. It's like, yeah. It's incredible. Like,
well, and the good thing about it is, you know, because of the way the offense is run, there's so many post-up opportunities.
Right.
Blake is such a great post player. And, you know, one of the best passers also from the post, whether it's high post or low post,
in the league. You'd rather see Blake Griffin posting and passing over, say, Robin Lopez / Kyla Quinn / Kevin Seraphin? Is that what you're telling me?
I mean, yeah. I mean, I love Robin, and he really does bring a lot of good things, especially in terms of helping out Kristaps while he's still in his development stage. But, you know, Blake Griffin is better than him.
Well, here's the thing that I was thinking about when I was thinking about this. Won't happen, this deal.
Of course not. Both teams would say no.
Right, but it's interesting to think about because, number one, Kristaps is not really ready to play consistent minutes at the five.
Right, at least not full time. You know, he does it now for, you know, 10, 12 minutes a game. But
I mean, you look at, like, he can't really rebound at all unless he has, like, a physical someone in there who is tying up those other bodies.
That's why Robin helps so much. And, like, this is something that's been consistent with Robin throughout his career. His rebound numbers aren't great, but the power forward next to him always rebounds better when he's on the floor.
Porzingis' numbers, rebounds per 100 possessions, 11.6 with Lopez in there, and that drops to 8.5 with him out.
There you go. That's a huge difference.
Huge, huge, huge difference. And it would be really interesting because I get, you know, who comes off the bench then?
Right.
Porzingis would come off the bench, I would assume. You'd have to do something with Lopez. It would be really interesting. It would be one of those things where it wouldn't really work this year all the time.
No.
And probably not for, like, 3 years. Because the thing with Porzingis is going to be that he's just not strong enough. It's going to be a while until he is strong enough. Like, I mean, every game you just watch guys, and it's definitely in the scouting report now, because every time the ball goes up, his man looks for him and just, like, clears him out with, like, one arm, pushes him until he bends over like a reed.
Yeah, and they have to, too.
They have to.
Otherwise, you know, all of the putback dunks are going to happen. Like, the other night against, who was it, when he came flying in from outside the three-point line a couple days ago. Why am I blanking on who they played?
Wait, you're talking about the not the Raptors game, but the game.
Oklahoma City game. On Tuesday night. Ibaka just didn't do it one time on a flallow three. And Kristaps literally came from off the screen from behind the three-point line and put it down over everybody. It was like he was horizontal almost.
It was beautiful. And then Aero Flallow absolutely strangled the game to death.
Yeah, the combination of Aaron Aflalo wanting to take all the shots and needing to take all the shots and having all the shots designed to come to him. It's the same late-game offense the Knicks always run. It was just for Aflalo and not Carmelo.
You know, it's interesting because early in the season and in summer league, it seemed like the Knicks were running maybe a little, let's just call it 50% triangle and 50% wide open, like, just try and get something quickly offense.
Mm-hmm.
As it's the season has progressed, I'd say it's like that's gone up to like 60%, 70%. Not the bench guys who can actually run, but we've got such a slow lineup.
Yeah.
That it's like it just bogs down into this, especially without Melo on the floor, who's like weirdly become our most effective ball mover in a way.
Oh, he's the best passer on the team, and I'm not sure it's all that close.
Yeah, it's like he's – without him, the offense just looks freaking terrible.
Oh, yeah. And it's the thing about the offense, I think, is that it's not so much that they're running a different offense than that they've been flexible about how they initiate it. Like, right. Last year, every time they would come down the floor and they'd throw that guard-to-guard pass – and then the point guard would cut to the corner every single time, and then they would mechanically run through the motions. Now guys are free to sort of push the ball up the floor, take a drag screen and delayed transition, and then if nothing comes from that, then they work their way into the offense. And that'll happen, you know, half the time or so.
Yeah. I mean, part of it is it's really frustrating, and it's really hard to get a read on this offense because our point guards are,
right.
So not really up to the task. I mean, I love Galloway, but he's probably he is like a really great backup guard.
Yes.
You know, at best.
I thought that Chris Herring made a good comparison on Nate Duncan's podcast the other day, that he's sort of like the BJ Armstrong of this Knicks team.
Yes.
Where he's a good guard, but who should probably be coming off the bench, and he's not really a two, and he's not really a one. He's just a guard.
Right, except more athletic and physical than BJ.
Yeah, a little bit. And they're built sort of similarly, I think.
Right.
And we'll get to the point guard. So I want to go back to the Blake thing real quickly, not because I think it's ever going to happen, but because that's the most interesting thing about Kristaps to me, is that he opens up the kinds of players that you can get to pair with him so much. Yeah. And look, Carmelo is a unbelievable player, and he's still better than Kristaps right now. But the thing about the Knicks and the thing about his contract was you needed such specific kind of players to surround him because of the way he plays that it's very difficult to do that on a cost-effective basis. Like, you need everybody around him to be a plus defender, and you need at least three plus shooters on the floor with him at all times in order to have, like, the best possible team around him. Kristaps lets you go for different kinds of players. Like, you can go for a four that doesn't necessarily have three-point range, you know? Or you can go for a four that isn't necessarily a rim protector because he's such a good one already, you know? And those are two sort of foundational skills that you need at power forward these days. And look, he has them. And that's why he works so well there next to Robin. But in the future, you don't necessarily need those skills from that spot because he can do them at the spot next to that, which isn't necessarily a traditional thing for a center to do.
It's pretty great. Yeah. I mean, so what going forward, the triangle, what is your sense of what's going to happen with the triangle?
I think that as long as Fisher is here, it's going to be run in some sense or another. You know, they're not running the pure 100% triangle offense.
Although they're running more of it than they were running. But they are, yes.
But I do think that's a function of the personnel. But it's also, you know, he's built some new stuff into it, and he's talked about sort of trusting guys to make reads within it in terms of when they can do other things that might come more naturally,
right?
Giving them a little bit more freedom, you know, but because of the personnel that's out there, like there's, especially in the starting lineup, they're so slow.
Yeah, it's unbelievable how slow they are.
That a lot of times, you know, those other things might not necessarily open up. Whether that changes with new personnel, we'll see. But I think as long as Phil is here too, there's going to be a commitment on some level to that system, whether it's a hybrid or the pure version of it. That's his thing, and as long as he's here, I think it's going to stick around.
Yeah. But I looks like it hinders. I think it hinders Kristaps.
It probably does a little bit, but it's also, I think if Fisher continues, or whoever the coach is, continues allowing guys to not necessarily break it, but to explore new things within it, especially if they get a point guard that can penetrate into the paint and really draw extra defense on pick and rolls.
That's a must.
And things like that. Then it won't necessarily be as constricting. You know, that's the thing. We've never seen the triangle run with a point guard who is dynamic off the bounce.
Well, but in theory, like the Phil Jackson theory is that you don't need that guy. And by the way, like this, I have this, I find it interesting that, maybe this is just, I don't know if this is real or if this is just me seeing this, but I find it interesting that guys who are ex-players that become coaches invariably seem, not always, but invariably seem to gravitate towards a system that seems like it answers criticisms of the way they were used when they were players. You know what I mean? Like Phil Jackson was a kind of like bench, monkey wrench, energy, big man guy.
Mm-hmm.
And he's latched onto this system that essentially gives big men more control over the offense. You know, like Steve Kerr was a spot-up three-point shooter, and he's like...
He's got everybody moving and passing all over the place.
Everybody moving and passing and taking more threes than anybody's like ever seen in
their
life.
But also, you know, Kerr played in those kind of systems. Like, ideally, in its purest form, the triangle is supposed to work that way too.
Right.
With everybody moving and cutting and passing all over the place.
Right.
And that was what he played in, you know, not as much with Popovich. You know, they obviously weren't the Spurs they are now.
When Draymond is at center, and that's like very triangle-ish, like the way
everybody has some triangle baked into whatever their offense is. You know, just the principles of having guys in certain spaces. You know, they don't have the same reads, they don't have the same cuts. But there are the principles, I think, of it are within almost every offense.
Yeah. What was I saying? The triangle.
Yeah, and Kristaps.
Yeah, I think, like I was saying, I think he's ostensibly the perfect triangle big. It's just, is the triangle the right system for him and everybody needs to be seen? Like, they need a guard who can penetrate.
Yeah, and look, whether that's a point guard or an off guard doesn't particularly matter. I mean, what matters is they don't really have that right now, you know. Jaren Grant is their best off-the-dribble guard, but a lot of times he can't use his dribble because every team in the league knows he can't shoot.
Yeah.
And they just sink so far off him.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes he'll call for, you know, an immediate second screen after the guy goes under, which is harder to stop him from getting in the paint, because it's difficult to go under two consecutive screens and still be able to maintain, you know, where you are in front of your man. But he hasn't played with Kristaps all that much. You know, Kristaps spends most of his time playing next to Calderon and Aflalo, who are the two slowest guys on the team.
Yeah, and Calderon drives me crazy just for...
Oh, I thought you were going to say Calderon drives, like as in he drives to the basket. And I was like, dude, no, he doesn't.
He just drives me crazy in terms of like the amount of times he leaves my son standing there with his hands cupped, waiting for the ball at the three-point line.
Yeah, I mean,
I was like, Calderon, you son of a bitch.
And look, Jose is a great passer, too. But he is like...
He's like a caretaker passer. I mean, he's a solid passer. But he's like a bond, not like a hedge fund. You know what I mean? Like he's like
the Alex Smith of point guards, where and that's a you know the Kansas City Chiefs quarterback, where he has such a high assist to turnover ratio, just like Alex Smith has such a high touchdown to interception ratio. But a lot of that is because he will never ever ever throw a risky pass.
Yeah, never.
That will You know, Kristaps pops open for just a second, and then that window closes. Jose is not throwing that pass.
No, he's not throwing that
pass. You know, and I think that does frustrate a lot of people.
And also, Aaron Aflalo, I need to check this on the tracking the NBA stats tracking number. But I feel like Aaron Aflalo has passed to Porzingis like zero times. Maybe like 0.5 times. Is that a real number? That guy seems like a really great guy, but his game is such that when he's off, he hurts you way more than how much he helps you when it works.
Yeah, and it's
because
he's
your
got...
spacing is all the way off, and like you guys are getting out in transition, and it's just like. And it takes the entire shot clock for the thing to unfurl, and it's just awful.
He's actually throwing Porzingis 7.8 passes per game.
I don't believe that's real.
That's from the tracking data.
I don't believe that. That's too high.
Kristaps is actually shooting much better off of Aflalo passes than he is off passes from Carmelo, which is a little bit strange.
Well, I mean, probably because...
Carmelo is drawing defense elsewhere,
right. And maybe because Aflalo has been dribbling for 12 seconds when he throws the pass.
Yeah. Aflalo had been, until recently, the second most efficient post-up player in the league behind Durant. He's had a few bad games from there since then. But the thing about his post-up game is, more often than not, he's using it to try to score. These days, post-ups are much more efficient when they're used as a vehicle to open something else. And that's something that I wrote about earlier this year. Almost all of the Knicks post guys are using it as a vehicle to score. And that's what's, been such a great thing about Carmelo's post game this year, is that he's throwing all different kinds of passes from there that we didn't necessarily see him throw before. Not just the cross-court pass, but a pass to a cutter down the middle of the lane, or a pass once he already goes into his move off the dribble, which is something we'd never seen before. That's the really encouraging thing. With a follow, you don't really get that.
Yeah, and the other thing with the Knicks post-ups is it just takes so long for them to develop.
That's been going on years and years and years.
That's the thing that drives me crazy. I mean, at some point, someone's going to figure out how to reinvigorate the post game as a way to counter small ball, but it's not. It's going
to
be.
There are already ways to do that.
It just doesn't involve
walking the ball up the court,
right.
Sticking
involves,
a guy on the block, and have him throw his hand in the air and trying for 8 seconds to enter the ball into him.
Right.
You do it like the Spurs do, or like the Warriors do when they get theirs, and it's. You run a little bit of misdirection offense, and then you have a guy duck in, and he's got good position, and the pass is easy to make, and he can take advantage of what's there.
I think that's the thing that's really frustrating about the triangle, I think, for like a lot of Knicks fans that watch a lot of other teams, is that it's great that Lopez is scoring at a rate that allows you to keep throwing him the ball, but at the same time, it kills 8 seconds of the clock.
Right.
You're also, empowering dudes like Serafin to do the same thing. Dudes like Kylo Quinn, who I like a lot, but also makes really bad decisions. And it's like you're empowering these other players to make decisions in the post that other offenses would not, let them do that. And it kind of sucks.
Yeah.
But whatever. That's shitting on the triangle.
Sure. And look, there are issues with almost every offense except for the Warriors. Because any issues there are papered over by the fact that Steph is an actual literal flaming ball of fire. The one thing we talked about a few minutes ago before we got away from it was that we've never seen the triangle with sort of a dynamic, off-the-bounce point guard. And, speaking of that, there were all sorts of rumors yesterday and the day before about how the Hawks are shopping to some degree, or taking calls on to some degree, Jeff Teague, who is obviously significantly better off the bounce than Jose Calderon. which, I think that the list of people that aren't significantly better off the bounce than Jose Calderon boils down to, like, people that aren't in the NBA.
Right.
And even then, like, yes. most of college basketball and probably most of high school basketball.
You may know somebody who's better off the bounce than Jose Calderon.
Yeah, and people that we played pickup at Sloan with are better off the bounce than Jose Calderon right now.
And by the way, like, the Knicks really need Jose Calderon, so I feel bad. Like, he's a good dude.
He is a good dude. Really he's a prince in the locker room. He's yeah. great to talk to when he's not annoyed if you're asking him about injuries.
Right.
For the 14th day in a row.
Yeah, like, they absolutely need him because they need that shooting and they need somebody who's a real, who's got a point guard mindset. At the same time, yeah, he can't move. Jeff
yeah.
Teague.
You can't move on either side. So, yeah, no. Jeff Teague, probably, definitely an upgrade in terms of ability to get into the paint and his overall offensive repertoire. Also,
yes.
definitely an upgrade on defense because, again, the list of people not an upgrade on defense over Calderon is extremely short.
Right.
But he's what, like the 11th to 15th best point guard in the league or something?
Which, by the way, I don't mind.
No. But the cost to get him, I think, is something that it's going to be too much.
Well, that's the thing.
Right?
That's the thing. Is like, why now? We've got free agency coming up this summer and the next summer. Next summer is like a bumper crop of players. There's like, I mean, Westbrook and freaking
Chris Paul
and Curry and Kyle Lowry and Dennis Schroeder and you know, Schroeder is restricted, but whatever, you know, like there are George Hill, like if you want to go down to
right, and look, George Hill, like, prototypical triangle point guard.
Exactly. Like there's other things you can do for that you can do without kind of like renting Jeff Teague for a price that's probably going to be too much to pay
right.
at this point in time. And it's also kind of like old Knicks thinking. I'm hoping when
right.
I say old that that's really what it is. There's no reason to make that move now. I think the thing, Kristaps affords breathing room in your developmental time frame.
Right.
Now you got some money coming. Cap's going up. Guys are coming off. Now's the time to, what was that? Did you just drop like your gun or something?
Yeah, that was it, my gun.
I think now's the time to do what the Knicks have never done in the past, which is build piece by piece. Like, okay, this year's free agency is probably going to be a bust for everyone in the league. There's really not that much there, you know, after Kevin Durant. Like, there's a lot of dudes who aren't going anywhere.
Right, like Mike Conley is the prize guy after Durant. And look, I love Mike Conley, but it's not like he's a guy who single-handedly changes the direction of your franchise.
Right, and as it stands right now, assuming that Aflalo and Williams opt in, we've got like 19, 18 and change. That's not going to get it done. And so the thing to do now is, you know, husband your cap space, make moves around the periphery for, you know, guys that you either flippable or that can help you, and then see what happens in 2017. There's no reason to...
Right. Just do another version of what you did this year, where you had solid
yes.
guys on affordable
exactly.
contracts.
Exactly.
You're moving in the right direction almost no matter what anyway. Because
right.
of Kristaps. And the cost to get somebody like Teague for what would essentially amount to a year and a half.
Right.
You know, you're going to have to give them, like, I think that at a minimum, you'd have to give them Grant.
Which would be so funny, by the way.
Would be
hilarious.
Absolutely hilarious. And look, Grant's best case scenario is probably Jeff Teague.
If everything goes right, he's Jeff Teague. I think, you know, Grant is probably, like, ends up being a really good backup point guard.
Right. And look, having a good backup point guard
hey.
Is fun. It's yeah. good. It's a good thing to have, and you don't have to, like...
Let me just say that I thank the amount of pleasure that I take in Tim Hardaway Jr.
Oh, yeah.
Being trash is unseemly. It's really, like, I'm not proud of myself.
I'm proud of you.
Like, I definitely go on Peachtree Hoops Forum and, like, read threads about Tim Hardaway Jr. and dudes complaining about him.
No, you don't.
I do that. Oh,
makes, my God.
Like, it makes it, like, I don't do it all the time, but I've done it, and it makes, and I'm not proud of it. I'm not proud of it, but it's, like, really, when's the last time the Knicks definitively won a trade involving a first-round draft pick?
They won it the night it was executed. Like, they took a guy 24th in the draft, then saw him be, like, below average at best, and then traded him for what was Grant, the 16th pick, 17th pick?
19, I think 19, I want to say.
He was the 19th pick. Okay, so yeah. They took a guy who was the 24th pick, wasn't good, and then traded him for a higher pick because he's Tim Hardaway's son.
Forget where Tim Hardaway Jr. was picked. He's not good.
Right.
He's 100% not good. Arguably the worst defensive player in the league.
Although he has been playing recently and is, like, doing barely some things. But, like, look, when that's the best thing you can say about the guy, like, he's doing some things.
Right,
you know,
he's doing some things.
Look, just getting 2 extra years of a guy on the rookie scale for him was a win.
Which is why it would be amazing to, like, to send Grant back to Atlanta for
right.
Jeff Teague.
Right.
And then Jerry and Grant can take Tim Hardaway Jr.'s minutes. But still, yeah, like, why... There's no reason to do this kind of move now.
Right, look, Jeff,
and lock up the cap space.
Jeff Teague would make the team better today.
Yes.
There's no question about that. But better to the point where it would matter?
Right, no.
No. Like, no. You put Jeff Teague on the team, it's still a toss-up whether or not
seed.
They
right,
make the playoffs.
Seventh seed.
Like, that's like at best, you know?
Yeah.
And still, they're getting beat badly by whoever they play in the first round. Like, it,
right.
You know, he doesn't significantly raise the ceiling of the team. And to have to give up, you know... And look, when you have Carmelo on essentially a max deal, and in 3 years you're going to sign Kristaps to a max extension, and you're presumably going to add more high-priced guys in free agency...
Cap's going to be about $108 million, and there's, like, everyone is on the move in 2017.
Right, and look, Jeff Teague's contract expires after next year. Then all
yes.
of a sudden, you got to give him $20 million a year, and you're paying 45% of the cap to Carmelo and Jeff Teague. Like, where are you going with that?
Right.
Like, there's just not really much of a purpose to doing that, especially because it's probably going to cost you not just, you know, a guy in Grant who could be a valuable backup point guard for a guy that you sign, but also, like, an additional first-round pick, most likely. And when you have all of these high-priced guys, you need cheap, cost-controlled talent with upside to surround them.
That's what I hope they do. Please, Knicks, be the Knicks that you've been for about 8 or 9 months now.
Right.
And not the Knicks that you've been for 20-some-odd years. Just be what you've been for the last 8-9 months, which is
right.
just patience.
A normal team. Like, just act like
yeah.
you're a real team.
Act like a real team.
And not like you have to make the playoffs tomorrow or the world is going to end.
Right.
And look, like we said, you know, even getting Jeff Teague doesn't guarantee you make the playoffs. It's not like he's a franchise-changing guy.
Yep.
And that's the thing, too. Like, I could count on 0 hands the number of times any Knicks fans had mentioned, like, oh, we got to go get Jeff Teague before there was all of a sudden a rumor about the Knicks possibly inquiring about Jeff Teague And then all of a sudden, everybody's like, oh my God, we gotta get Jeff Teague. What can we get Jeff Teague for? And look, people are throwing around like Calderon and Aflalo for Jeff Teague. And like, no, what are you talking about?
They're not stupid. You know,
there are two teams in trades.
Right.
Just in case, at least two teams in trades, just in case people don't know that. Like, this is, you know, we break news on this podcast. There are two teams more often than not involved in most trades. I don't know if you... Did you know that?
I was not sure about that.
Yeah, I mean, look, this is...
Look at, I mean...
Go ahead.
I'm looking at this 2017 free agency class for point guards. Steph Curry, Russell Westbrook, Chris Paul will be old, but whatever. Kyle Lowry, Dennis Schroeder is restricted. Derrick Rose... Someone's going to take a swing on Derrick Rose just being a guy.
Yep.
Drew Holiday, Michael Carter Williams, George Hill, who, like, secretly, if you strike out on all these top guys, I like George Hill.
I love George Hill.
I really like George Hill, like, especially for the Knicks. Patty Mills.
And look, George Hill would fit in great with Robin in terms of weird hair.
Yeah. It's a great year for weird hair. Like, I'm... There's so much good, weird hair this year.
Oh, yeah.
Sullinger, Alan Crabb.
Payton.
George Hill, Robin Lopez.
Marcus Smart also has the Odell Beckham hair.
Do you think it's weird that Marcus Smart and Jared Sullinger, like, essentially have the same hair? Like, do they look at each other and go, like, why did you do this? Like, I called this first.
I think they planned it when they got up in the morning. Look, they wear the same outfit to work every day.
This is my theory on this is that it's the creeping influence of soccer on the NBA. Like, I think that the soccer guys got tattoos from the NBA guys, and the NBA guys got weird hair from the soccer guys.
I can buy it.
That's my theory.
I can buy it. Like, so you can see Schroeder that. Had that sort of streak in his hair first. You know, just
yes.
Like the small blonde, whatever color that is, streak. And now guys are going with, like, the... What do you even call that?
It's, like, kind of orangish, I guess.
It's like an orange mohawk, but only on the top.
Right.
Like, what do you call that? I don't even know.
It's a mohawk. But it's some kind of, like, a flame mohawk. I don't know
yeah.
What it is.
It's... Yeah.
I mean, there's so much bad hair.
It's the flaming mohawk. We're going to name it right now.
Also, shouts to my guy, Cole Aldrich, who I christened Hollywood Cole from now on, because that dude... Dude, he's like, people move out to LA and they start like looking healthier and getting cool haircuts and looking tan. Cole Aldrich, my guy, he's got like this kind of tight mohawk now, and he's like kind of, he's got some color to his face. I'm telling you, my dude, Hollywood Cole.
He probably goes tanning with Pablo.
He feels himself now.
Yeah. He's playing some nice minutes for the Clips now.
He's like playing some really great minutes.
Yeah, because
the Clippers.
You know, Doc just decides that guys are out of the rotation on a whim, and then decides I'm going to play Cole Aldrich.
Well, I mean, the thing with Josh Smith is like, do you think you maybe didn't do enough like research to figure out that this wouldn't work? Like, anytime you end up trading a guy, like after 6 months. You didn't do enough research on how this would work. Like, Mike Brown is in your locker room. You should have
Mike
known.
Woodson.
Mike Woodson is in your locker room. You should have realized that this was not really going
to
work.
Well, look, it was all just part of Doc's efforts to assemble the Eastern Conference playoff all-stars from, like, 2009. You know, it's understandable.
It's continuing. Ever continuing.
Yeah. Like, if Prigioni were in the NBA in 2009, he would have been an Eastern Conference playoff all-star as well.
Yeah.
You know? But, you know, what are you going to do? I mean, Josh Smith, sometimes it doesn't work out with that guy. Which
Shouts to my dude Hollywood Cole for stealing Josh Smith's sign and sending him back to
I love the name, by the way, Hollywood Cole. It's great. Oh, man, it's great. I do want to touch on one more Knicks-related thing. Which is, you know, we talked about how if Aflalo and Williams don't pick up their player options, that's how the Knicks can carve out the amount of cap space they want to take and run it. You know, one
right.
of the
it's like
one
12,
of the,
it's like an extra $12.5 million.
Right. Flowers got an $8 million playoff option. Williams is a $4.6 million playoff player option. At this point, given how he's played, I would imagine Williams, at least, is not going to pick up that player option. He's going to hit free agency, I would think.
I would imagine. Yes, somebody
Aflalo, I'm less it. Sure. But I think because of his scoring average, he could probably get more than $8 million this summer if he wanted to get it. You know, he has talked about wanting to stay here the rest of his career, but who doesn't pay lip service to that when they're on a team? Other guys are going to be free agents. Lance Thomas, who's become surprisingly incredibly valuable.
We got to pay. That's the guy you have to pay.
I think
you'll get him for a decent price too.
Because they have early bird rights on both him and Langston Galloway, and they're both restricted, but they're both going to have to be paid, you know, more than what their cap holds are. So if you got to decide between Williams and Aflalo, you're bringing Williams back over Aflalo, right?
100%. Just because of the age, or not even just, I mean, the style of play, his age. I think it's funny, when he signed.
That was my least favorite contract they gave out this offseason.
Howard Beck, the great Howard Beck, I ran into like at Summer League, and we were talking about him, and he said, you know, he said to Phil when, this is Howard Beck, should I do Howard's voice? I can't do Howard's voice.
Can you do Howard's voice?
So Howard Beck told me that Williams wanted that deal structured that way because he said to Phil Jackson, I'm going to make you guys pay me. Like, I'm going to have a great year. I'm going to make you pay me.
And so, look, he's having his best year, yeah.
He's absolute 100% his best year. He's, like, revitalized. The guy was on his way out of the league.
Yeah, and look.
He's revitalized.
At the least, he's a rotation player.
Yes.
Like, I don't think he's a starter quality player. He's still not very good defensively. Still not a good shooter. But I think he's learned how to channel his energy in the right way, at least here. And it's worked well for him.
He's great. He's a great cutter. Like, that's his most effective part of his game. And there are those lanes for that
and
kind of
when you're
game.
A bad shooter, learning how to cut is so essential.
Yeah.
Like, look at, you know, obviously not anywhere close to the same caliber of player, but Dwayne Wade is able to make the fact that he can't shoot work because he's probably the best cutter in the league.
Well, he's like Vulcan. He's like Jedi mind trick the entire league into thinking he can shoot threes just...
Right, Tom Haberstroh wrote about that the gravity score a couple of years ago, and Wade was number one in the league, even though he can't shoot, because everybody knows he can't leave him alone, otherwise he'll be wide open for a cut to the rim.
It's so weird that, like, shouts to Dwayne Wade for,
for real.
Amazing. Yeah, Derek Williams, like, that's his game. Like, a really, really good cutter. He can't really handle the ball. You don't really want him to shoot that much. But when he gets a seam, he cuts really hard.
He's good at, like, two things. Getting out in transition and cutting.
Yes.
Which is, like, exactly what you want from an energy bench player.
Yeah.
You know, he's not that good of a rebounder. He can't handle the ball. Like, his turnover rate is so low because he basically never passes.
Yeah.
Which
is fine because he's not a good passer.
Right.
That's fine. Like, don't, like, great. Just cut to the rim and dunk, please. Like, don't try to get fancy on it.
Right, exactly. We've had enough Knicks try to throw passes and throw them into the stands.
Just cut backdoor and dunk, please.
Like anytime Al Harrington put the ball on the floor and then tried to pass, it was a 1,000% chance the ball was going three rows into the stands. I love Al. He's great. Although he did cost the Knicks two wins against the Clippers for hanging on the rim.
That's like one of the great like Knicks shared memory of like the last 12 years.
That's how you know
fans who lived
if somebody
through that era.
Right. That's how you know if somebody actually watched the games in those years. Is if they remember those two games.
I was so angry with him. I remember reading a story where where he might have not even he was maybe with the Wizards at this time, and he was saying that when they play New York, people still yell to him about that. Like a meter maid was screaming at him like about hanging on the rim those two times. It's amazing.
It's amazing.
Al Harrington shouts to you, and you're a chimpanzee.
Yeah, definitely shouts to Al Harrington. Al Buckets. Dude was the man. Sort of defined the personality of those horrible, horrible Knicks teams. Like, a guy with a big name that had, like, a pretty good scoring average, but couldn't do anything else and was horribly inefficient, but was just so fun.
Here's an interesting question I have for you. I don't know, it's like, Rajon Rondo.
Ooh.
Unrestricted this summer.
Yes.
Would you sign Rajon Rondo? Noted homophobe.
Noted homophobe, Rajon Rondo.
Having a great bounce back year.
Would make him a great fit in New York, where there are no gay people here. You know? Like,
it would really, 100% would be kind of like a, he makes us better move. Would you sign Rajon Rondo?
For a variety of reasons, I don't think so. not just because of that. It certainly doesn't help.
Right.
But he still can't shoot. His defense is still bad. And he doesn't fit the way that the Knicks want to play, or the way that they should play with Kristaps.
Right. He wants to hold the ball. He wants to direct the entire offense. And he wants to, like, call every play. He wants to pound the ball.
You know, good for him that he's having a bounce back year, but somebody else can pay him.
Right.
And look, he's going to be 30 soon. And you don't want point guards whose games are based on athleticism really after they're, like, when they're on their downswing. Especially when you're going to have to pay him, you know, $10 plus million a year. He signed that contract with the Kings this year for $10 million. Presumably, he's going to get more than that this summer. And I don't think the Knicks need to be spending all their cap space, essentially, on Rajon Rondo. Is that where you fall to?
Yes, I don't want Rajon Rondo at all. But I was thinking about how intriguing it would be, because Melo supposedly loves Rajon Rondo.
Right, which is really weird, I think.
I think it's very strange as well. Why would you love this man?
I mean, certainly Rondo doesn't love any other men.
Oh,
Rondo. Couldn't just be, like, a good dude.
What?
Look, I mean, he said some horrible, horrible things, apparently, to Bill Kennedy, who, by all accounts, is a very good ref and good person, you know, and doesn't deserve to be treated that way at work.
Yes, I just, like, he meant it in the way that we all think he meant it.
100%. He was on that Celtics team.
Yes.
Where, you know, look, Doc Rivers denies whatever happened. Maybe it did, maybe it didn't. But something happened with that Celtics team and Bill Kennedy. And Rondo was there and he knew about it.
Yeah, he knew about it.
You know?
I that's just the way I feel. He's been great for Sacramento this year.
He has. Do you want to talk Thanasis real quick?
Back.
He's back.
He's back, baby. Here's the thing on Thanasis. He's not good.
He's entertaining, and he's Giannis's really brother, and he works so freaking hard on defense.
My thing with Thanasis is this. He's an incredible athlete. He's super high energy player. Like, for how rough he is, it's really rare to see a guy work as hard as he does. He has no idea what he's doing on the basketball court. Like, he just kind of runs around.
Yeah.
And he'll do one, maybe two things that are like, wow, I've never, like, where he'll either make a steal that you thought there's no way he can make a steal like this, or he'll, like, switch onto a guy, like, recover in some super athletic way and manage to change a play. And he'll do that once or twice a game, and the rest of the time he's just kind of running around, like, wildly, like, with no rhyme or reason to what he's doing.
He'll make those kind of wow plays, and then he'll make the wow play, like, wow, dude, what are you doing right now? You know? And look, they're hemorrhaging bodies right now. A bunch of guys are hurt. Carmelo's hurt. Lance Thomas was just hurt. Kristaps has his Toronto flu.
Klay Anthony Early got shot.
Klay Anthony Early got shot.
Shouts to Klay Anthony Early. Shouts to No More Knicks getting robbed.
Please, no more Knicks getting robbed. Derek Williams got robbed also, although that seems to have been by two females that he brought to his apartment, which
is... It was nonviolent.
A little bit different. Thank God. Yeah. Right, exactly. And look, you know, Clay Anthony is a nice kid. I like him in terms of the few interactions I've had with him, but that's a real dangerous situation he got himself in there. Yeah. You know, I don't know if he got himself in it, you know, the way... The news was...
There's some shadiness to... There's some definite shadiness.
Yeah. Something happened.
Like the fact that... first of all, this is like a digression, but the fact that like three cars boxed in his car, that was a setup. Some kind of setup. Somebody was like, yo, there's a guy throwing a lot of money right now, and he's going to be leaving.
Right. And like whether they knew it was a Nick or knew it was Clay Anthony or not.
And then the fact that the place got firebombed like the day after, there's like some weird stuff going on.
Right. And you don't, if you're going to shoot a guy in the progress of a robbery, you probably do it while you're robbing him, not...
It's like,
after?
It seemed like, yeah, it's definitely like one of the weirder.
And not in the knee?
The fact that they took the gold out of his mouth, like they took his gold teeth, I've never heard of that happening.
This is certainly a very, very strange situation.
Yeah. Thanasis is not going to play.
Yeah, I don't think he's going to play very much, if at all.
He's going to be that Clay Anthony early guy, like he'll... Like, if they're blowing someone out, they'll be, all right, let's give...
Right,
let's
and he might be the client, the early guy, in terms of he's the guy that doesn't dress.
Right.
You know?
Right.
Which is what Clay Anthony had been for most of the season. You know, he's not some savior coming up from the D-League. He's not even, like, a Galloway guy who's coming up from the D-League and has, like, a clear path to minutes.
Right. I think that is the case. And also, Thanasis is secretly old.
Right.
Like, that's the thing. It's not like he's 19 years old.
People think he's like baby Greek freak when he's Giannis's older brother.
He's the older brother.
Right. The oldest brother. There are two younger ones than Giannis.
Yes. So it's like he's 23.
Something like that.
Yeah. It's like if he was 19 or 20 and kind of played this way, you'd be like, oh, I can see how this could maybe shake out. He's 23. Like,
He doesn't solve their biggest issues. You know, he can't dribble.
Cannot dribble.
I mean,
he's just a dude who runs around.
Maybe he can guard point guards. Who knows? But
sure. He's not very good at, like, he can guard one-on-one. He's not very good at guarding, like, within a scheme.
No.
Which is, like, basically that is NBA defense.
Exactly. You know.
I wish him well.
Look, if he surprises both of us, that would be best case scenario. And that's the weird, one of the weird things about Knicks fans, is if Thanasis is good, people will come at us and be like, I told you guys, said he wasn't going to be good. Like, we wouldn't rather him be good than be right. Like,
It would be a huge plus if he was good.
Right. Like, you know, I did not think the Knicks were going to be nearly as good this year as they actually are. I'm pleasantly surprised and very happy about how good they are. I would much rather have been wrong and them actually be this good than me be right and then win like 25 games this year, you know? Yeah. Like, you know, at the end of the day, we're both still Knicks fans. Yeah. And we've come a long, long, long way this year from, you know, 2 years ago when Chris Ryan was sending us Gmail with depressed Knicks fan bat signal.
Guys,
let's talk.
Yeah, I hit my bottom when like Ray Fulton picked up his gun charge.
Oh God!
And I was thinking to myself, like, does this mean we can like cancel his contract? Like, I caught myself thinking that.
Right.
Like, does this help our cap? And I was like, wow, I'm a terrible person.
We've
come a long way.
Mike Woodson holding press conferences, being like, I don't hate Iman Shumpert, like, during his press conference. Even though he was, like, 60 games into his second season and Woodson was still calling him Rook.
It was a bad scene.
Yeah.
Mike Woodson, like, shouts to you for just being one of the weirdest human beings, like, that has ever coached the Knicks. Like, I could not figure out.
Shouts to Mike Woodson and Just for Men Jail.
Shouts to Mike Woodson for not kicking people to the curb.
Mike Woodson is a big part of what we do on this podcast. Nothing was better than, you know, his goatee when he was in New York was jet black. Like, you could not tell at all if he was graying. Then all of a sudden last year, he pops up with a full beard with the Clippers and it's all gray.
Also, he, like, kind of like a switching defense pioneer.
Right.
In a weird way. Like.
Yeah.
But not good.
And also would then claim that he didn't want guys to switch.
And then the mics would pick him up yelling, switch, 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 like during games.
He even engineered, like he made up a new kind of switch that Zach wrote about a few years ago in that season that the Knicks were actually really good when they basically played a style that Woodson was forced into and he tried at literally every opportunity to get out of. He came up with that sort of jump switch where the guy guarding the quarter shooter would pick up the point guard on his drive, and the guy guarding the point guard would run to grab the corner shooter. Like, he came up with new switches. That's how much he loved switching.
He's really a switching pioneer, and switching is kind of like the integral, is an integral part of, like, really.
Yeah, and the thing is, really you can do it defense. When you're a team like his Hawks or like the current Warriors, where everybody's sort of similar sized and moves well on their feet. You can't do it when you're playing Amari Stoudemire and Raymond Felton.
Shouts to Mike Woodson.
Shouts to Mike Woodson, as always, you know. I'm actually going to rename the podcast from Quo Vadimus to Shouts to Mike Woodson.
He's the dude.
He is the dude.
He's the secret switching pioneer of these last 5 years in the NBA.
Shouts to Mike Woodson, the secret switching pioneer. That's going to be the new name of the podcast. Even though I already named it when our friend Devin Karpardian was on the podcast, I renamed it I Don't Want to Speculate About Bojan Bogdanovic's Feelings. Which is, you know, just as obscure of a name as Quo Vadimus.
I'm glad that you're using, like, Latin. Someone's got to use the dead languages, and I'm glad it's you and not just, like, a bunch of lawyers.
Actually, you know what? That reminds me. This is the last thing we're going to talk about. Speaking of dead languages, Thrones, come back.
Well, those are, first of all, those are alive languages.
There are some alive languages, but like Old Valyrian is sort of a dead language, isn't it?
I mean, no, because, because there's, well, for one, I mean, Daenerys speaks it, but there's cities in Essos that are, still have a lot of the Valyrian culture, and so it's still spoken there.
This is why you're the maester, and I'm not. You know,
yeah.
It's obviously you've seen the teaser trailer things, right?
With the banners,
yeah,
like flapping in the wind.
I was all in. I was like, "There's not even footage. This isn't even going to be in the show, probably." And I'm 1,000% in on this right now. Like, give me Thrones tomorrow.
Super, 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 super exciting! I'm ready.
Oh,
my body is like very, very ready for this.
Are you going to be maestering somewhere? Hopefully.
Yeah, somewhere, somehow, it will get done.
Excellent. That's like the best news I've heard since Kristaps was named to the Rising Stars Challenge or whatever it's called, and gave exclusive comments to the New York Knicks' Jonah Ballo, who's a great guy, and exclusive comments from the player on their own team, which was great. Anyway, Jason, thanks a lot for doing this, man. We will talk soon, hopefully about a Manchester City Arsenal game or something like that.
Oh, I wish you nothing but bad luck. I'm sorry about your dude Kevin De Bruyne.
Oh my God!
Did you see, like, it was this is like kind of mean, but I think he was trying to flop a little bit to like enhance the like he really did get pulled back, and I think he tried to flop to make it look really good, but his like cleat.
Yeah,
he's stuck in the turf. And he just
bent backwards in a way that you shouldn't bend backwards. And that was like the best 20 minutes he'd played since coming to the team. He came on, completely changed the whole game.
Yeah.
Match, sorry.
So weird.
He was incredible. And look, he's going to be, I think, the guy that sort of has to take over for Yaya, which is incredibly depressing to me personally. But, you know...
I wish you misfortune.
Oh, well, thank you. I really appreciate that.
Yeah, thank you very much.
I appreciate you doing this.
And although, look, anyone but Lester. Let's fuck this Lester shit.
No, first of all, I didn't even know. They were so bad, I didn't even know that it was pronounced Lester and not Leicester. Like, because that's how it's spelled. It's spelled Leicester.
Yeah. But, sorry. My apologies to Bill Barnwell, but, like, nobody wants to see Leicester win the freaking Premier League. Come exactly. on.
Yeah. We want Manchester City to win. Let's be real here. On this podcast,
we want Manchester City to win. Fine.
Anyway, thank you again. Really appreciate it. Do you have anything at all other than your Twitter account to promote right now?
Come see me on Xbox. Xbox Live. Send me a friend request. Let's go.
And that's just network on Xbox as well, right?
Yeah.
All right. Check out Jason's Twitter stylings. Hopefully check out both his writing and his Game of Thrones thoughts fairly soon. As usual. You can find... And sorry, what was that?
That will happen somewhere.
And you can check out all the podcasts on horribleproxism.com. We have completely redone the podcast center on the top of the page to reflect all of the new stuff that has happened. And you can also find the podcast on iTunes, search for HP Basketball Network, or for the extremely obscure name of this podcast, Quo Vadimus. And we'll be back next week with the usual Friday podcast with Seth. Jason, thanks a lot, man.
Well, I'm Margulis.